This is Paul Puckett. Welcome back to Getting There, the money show that focuses on your life. You know, for the past few episodes, we've really focused on life, talking about topics such as redefining yourself, understanding that money is just a tool that provides security and provides for things in your life, but really shouldn't be a part of your life. It shouldn't be a focus. Today, we're going to shift a little bit more towards money, because as you know, this show is spontaneous and driven a lot by what I see the day of the show and leading up to the show. What's on people's minds? What are they talking about? What's out there that might either help or hurt your investment performance on the money side and, of course, affect your life? So we're going to start today with the disclosure. My name is Paul Puckett. I'm an investment advisor representative of Q1 Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm located in Virginia Beach, Virginia, serving clients in Virginia, North Carolina, and Florida, where I'm also a resident as well as a native. I'm also an independent insurance agent in Florida, serving clients in Virginia and Florida as well. Everything I say on this show should be interpreted as general advice, hopefully things that make you think, that improve your life and possibly improve your investment portfolio. Specific advice cannot be given on the show because I would need to know your specific financial information. So enjoy the show, but keep in mind, anything I say, you should check out with your professional, or if you're looking for a professional, feel free to look our way. So that's the disclosure. I like to do it nice and slow and in my own voice because I listen to investment shows and I hear something that is said so incredibly fast that it is absolutely impossible to understand, which reminds me of the fine print on most investment offerings. On those with a magnifying glass, perhaps, you can actually read it, but understanding it and seeing the volume of it, it usually is longer than whatever the document is. Is not fun. So I try to make things a little more fun for you on the show. Let's go to a brief commercial break. And today what we're going to be talking about are the articles you see and the news sources you hear on money. Who's telling you that? Should you listen to them? People today are living longer than ever before, thanks to medical technology. Even when we have accidents, we're able to recover from things that not too long ago we couldn't recover from. Have you suffered from a fall lately, or are you recovering from a surgery or an illness, or maybe age is causing you to have problems remembering to take your medications, or you need help bathing or dressing, or even just handling your daily chores or going shopping? I'd like to introduce you to a company that can help you. Caring Touch provides caregivers, certified nurses' assistants, home health aides, homemakers, and companions to help you through the activities of daily living that you may be having trouble with. They're available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and they'll structure a schedule that works for you. Give them a call at 941-376-9338. That's 941-376-9338. Caring Touch that we were just talking about is designed to help those who've begun to lose some of the ADLs, the activities of daily living, which I'm 55. I would not be considered by most to be weak. Now, I'm not a bodybuilder. I'm not, you know, but I'm at least average strength for a 55-year-old. During the break, the love of my life was having difficulty, you know, got to open the creamer, the International Delight Amaretta Cafe. It's got that seal on top. So my question is, how do they expect anybody above the age of, like, oh, I don't know, 25, to pull the foil thing off the top? It's glued on with some kind of substance that I'd like to know what it is, because next time I have something that just won't stay together, I'm going to take the glue from the International Delight coffee container and, well, stick it. So if you're having difficulty as a retiree opening anything, don't feel too embarrassed. The host of your show, age 55, as of a couple of weeks ago, had, a one-minute experience and a thumb cramp trying to get the foil top off the International Cafe container. Moving on to today's topic, but recognizing that interrupting our show briefly to consider coffee, which of course is the purpose of life, I thought might be appropriate. Okay. Ever since I joined the investment industry, the financial services industry, coming up on 30 years ago in 1987, late 87, I didn't know the difference at the time between a stock and a bond. I thought a bond, which I still believe and stand by, was what a man's word or a woman's word is based on. Your word is your bond. That's what I thought a bond was. Stock. I had a friend who was a stock boy at Publix. That's the big grocery store down in Florida. And I thought stock was what was on the shelves because he was a stock boy. He worked stock on the shelves. And I did a little bit of hunting and target shooting. And I also thought an alternative definition of stock was the portion of the rifle or shotgun that rests against your shoulder, usually made of wood back then, now who knows. Well, of course, I found out fairly quickly that a bond is a debt that you can buy, and they pay interest and fluctuate in value due to changes in interest rates, which we will be talking about, as always, on today's show. And then I found out a stock was actually ownership of a company, and that you could actually make money investing in these things. In my case, I prefer exchange-traded funds and mutual funds, which own stocks, so I don't have to get involved in trying to figure out which stock will win and which stock will lose. Well, needless to say, to educate myself back then, in addition to the industry training I received, and just on a brief side note, industry training for a stockbroker, that's a FINRA Series 7, used to be NASD Series 7. It changed from the National Association of Security Dealers to the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority a number of years ago. Either way, it's a self-regulatory organization. The rules are governed, maintained, and created by its members, which are brokerage firms. They actually do a very good job overall. The information to train for a stockbroker for a Series 7 license focuses, for some reason, on options and options trading, and that's one of the largest sections. And the other big section is, if you violate a given rule, for instance, if you were to sign, like Wells Fargo recently did, documents that, the client doesn't know about, and you, for instance, sign the client's name, what would your maximum monetary penalty and possibly license penalty be, or possibly jail, if you did that? So the test actually focuses on, we know you're probably going to do something wrong because you're getting into the Wall Street industry and therefore can't be trusted. And so we'd like to know, we'd like to make sure you know what the penalties will be when you do this. Okay, I know that's not why they do it, but you feel that way when you take the test, the presumption of you're going to do something boneheaded. I've always thought the test should have true-false for that. Would you ever sign a client's name to a document? Yes or no? I said true-false. If they say yes, they shouldn't get a license. Tell them the punishment later. Don't assume they're going to do it. Getting back to the point, in addition, and maybe because the industry training focused on penalties and focused on specific characteristics of investments, but not necessarily how to actually manage them, I did a lot of reading. I subscribed to magazines. I read the Wall Street Journal, still do. And of course, nowadays you can get almost anything you want on the web from just about everybody, including the Wall Street Journal. Although they're one of the few that still you need a subscription to read full articles. Well, as I got trained and gained experience in the field, I started noticing something. I would see articles that would cover something that I knew the way they were covering it was just not accurate. And then I noticed something, and this has increased over the past 20-something years, that a lot of times if I looked up the bio of the writer, even with a prestigious publication, the reason the article wasn't accurate is because the person writing it had absolutely no experience or training for the topic they were writing about. Which brings us to the first topic here on the show. And it allows me to cover something I've mentioned, but I want to cover in a little more detail. This is from MarketWatch, published on September 13th, 2016 at 2:48 p.m. Eastern Time. Needless to say, it's from the website. By Mike Sorrentino. You may know him from The Situation. And the title of the article is Three Ways the Department of Labor is Helping Retirees. So he gives three ways. And he starts with a comparison I love to make, which we're going to get into in a couple minutes anyway, we've talked about before, and that is Wall Street versus medicine, broker or advisor or insurance agent versus doctor. So I do like his first line. Visit a clinic and you assume that a doctor will make you healthier, not sicker. Obviously, you've talked to an accountant, you'd expect your tax bill to get lower, not higher. And if a lawyer writes your will, you think maybe that increases the chances that your wishes will be carried out upon your passing and not ignored. And for the most part, all three of those are accurate. I mean, there's some doctors out there that aren't the best, and CPAs and attorneys, but for the most part, that is true. Well, the administration recently directed the Department of Labor, since they felt the SEC was dragging its heels, to protect Americans from being robbed by the commissions made by brokers when they sell investments to innocent retirees and other investors. Now, specifically, the Department of Labor, and I believe this is an overreach, but the Department of Labor does govern ERISA, that's the Employee Retirement Income Security Act. I may have said that wrong, but I'm not looking at it at the moment. At any rate, ERISA is the big rule on retirement plans. So to protect you, they brought out an issue that I believe is very important, and that is your investment professional acting in your best interest? Okay, FINRA, which regulates brokers, requires brokers to offer suitable investments. What does suitable mean? Well, if you say your risk tolerance, we're going to get into this later in the show, if we have time. If you say your risk tolerance is conservative and they sell you a very aggressive stock fund, that would be considered a violation of the suitability rule. It's not really suitable for you, according to what you stated your risk tolerance was. That's the whole purpose of a risk tolerance questionnaire. The original intention was to make sure that financial professionals did not sell you something you shouldn't have. The actual implementation of the rule, the law of unintended consequences, is risk tolerance protects your investment professional so that when they make an investment recommendation based on what you said your risk tolerance was, if it matches, well, oh well, caveat emptor, buyer beware, you can't do a whole lot about that. Okay, so the Department of Labor issued these new rules, which were very controversial in the industry, but didn't really make the news until after it passed, to strengthen protections for investors who pay for advice on their retirement assets by forcing advisors to put the interest of their clients ahead of their own. On a side note, Q1 Advisors, who I disclosed earlier I'm an investment advisor representative of, is an investment registered investment advisory firm, which means we are held to the other standard, the fiduciary standard, which in very short language, and it's very vague, and it should be because that protects you, fiduciaries like registered investment advisors and lawyers and accountants are required to act in your best interest. We're much easier to sue. And that's why we have to make sure we do what's in your best interest so that should you sue us, we can win. The other obvious technique is to make sure we don't do anything you would sue us for, which is also in your best interest. Okay, so getting to the article. Three ways the Department of Labor is helping retirees. Keeping in mind your host does not believe the Department of Labor is helping retirees. I would have titled the article, Three Ways the Department of Labor is Hurting Retirees, but that's just me. Mr. Sorrentino states, retirees will get better advice because the person giving that advice is subject to the fiduciary standard, doing what's in your best interest. This is a very brief article, and so the example he gives is if a broker looks at two investment products, and they're both suitable, and one charges 0.75% annually and pays no commission to the broker, and the other one charges 2% annually with a 10% commission paid at the time of sale, which one would he sell? Well, obviously, he'd sell the second one. Now, first indication that Mr. Sorrentino may not know what he's talking about is brokers don't sell anything that charges less than 1% annually with no commission. Okay, that doesn't happen. The only thing typically they can sell that has no front commission or back commission would be a C share in a mutual fund. That's a type of share. We'll cover that one day. And that would be much higher, probably in the close to 2%, 1.5% plus range. It might be as low as 1% for a bond fund. So, and there's also nothing with the 10% commission that I'm aware of available to brokers. Typically, the max for a mutual fund is about 5.75%. You might find a variable annuity a little higher, 8% maybe, some private REITs, things of that nature. But pretty much getting to a 10% commission has gotten very, very difficult in the industry, which is a good thing in my opinion. So his presumption is an investment advisor, since we don't get a commission, will make a better recommendation. Okay, how accurate is that? Well, the concept is sound. He could have used better examples, like examples that actually might be real, but the position is basically accurate. Well, maybe like 60% accurate. And the reason I say that is there are some very good brokers who, even if they're not required to look out for your best interest, they plan to be in the field for a long time and know they probably should sell good products. All right, before we cause a headache, I'm going to quickly move through the next two. Retirees will no longer pay for their advisor to go to Hawaii. And that's a fairly obvious thing to point out. Brokers and insurance agents tend to get incentive trips when they sell at a certain level. They qualify for trips, and sometimes that's because they focus on a particular fund company or investment firm whose products, if they sell enough of them, will let them go to Hawaii, Costa Rica, South Africa, wherever. So since the rule minimizes the conflicts and they have to act in your best interest, his presumption is they can't do that anymore. All right, well, how accurate is that? Not. It's a good thought, but they just have to disclose to you that the fund I'm selling might reward me if I sell a lot of it, but they can still do it. But you will know about it. And then finally, number three, retirees will get a warranty. When an advisor, a broker, sells you a product that is subject to the best interest contract rule, exemption actually, BICE, funny how it rhymes with vice, they have to disclose everything, including a detailed breakdown of the commission. Mr. Sorrentino says this will serve as a warranty for the transaction, which means the advisor can no longer sell retirees' expensive products free from liability. Well, first of all, they've never been free from liability, but they've managed to limit it to arbitration and a suitability rule. He points out brokers are upset. Big names in the industry are even suing to stop the DOL. They are moving to a fee-based structure. This is a quote. They say that moving to a fee-based structure will make it unprofitable to service smaller accounts and harm those who need the advice the most. I'm continuing to quote, "This is comical. Are we really to believe that smaller investors are going to be worse off because they will no longer be targeted by brokers aiming to rip them off? Furthermore, true fiduciaries have been around for years and seem to be just fine working in the best interest of their clients." Okay, first of all, there is no warranty as a result of the Department of Labor rule. It tightened rules, but it doesn't give you a warranty, okay, at all. So, what might be wrong with true fiduciaries have been around for years and seem just fine working in the best interest of their clients? It shouldn't affect smaller investors. They're not going to have to pay more, are they? Well, I will tell you this. The more money you place with an advisor, the less percentage you will pay. And most registered investment advisory firms, including many of those who campaigned for this rule, don't take accounts below $1 million. Some not below $500,000. Some have minimums lower than that, but the vast majority, you better have money. You better have big money if you wish to hire an investment advisor. Now, how many small investors are out there? Because the evidence is already in. They're going to be paying more or choosing not to get professional advice. I mean, they can go to a CFP, maybe charge $2,500, pay $2,500 for a financial plan. On average, there are some that try to do the right thing from a fee standpoint, but even they might be more costly than the commissions that the small retiree is currently paying. So let's take a look at who are these retirees. According to the Economic Policy Institute, if you look at balances in retirement account savings plans, now the most recent study, because I just saw this past week, is evidently 2013. 50% of Americans have $5,000 in their retirement plan between the ages of 32 and 61. So these are not retired yet. $5,000. Okay. When we move up to the 60th percentile, meaning 60% not have this, but those that fall at the 60th percentile level, so they have more than 59% and less than 39%, have $20,100. What about the 70th percentile? $50,000. 80th percentile, meaning they have more than 80% of retirement savers between the ages of 32 and 61, have $116,000. The top 10%, the 90th percentile, $274,000. Now, all those numbers ranging from $5,000 to $274,000 are 401k, IRA, KEO plan, all retirement plan values. In essence, 90% of people age 32 to 61 are small investors when it comes to their retirement portfolio. Which brings us to my strongest recommendation. When you read or hear anything, you need to know who your source is. So I looked up Mike Sorrentino. This is from Wikipedia. It was the easiest to go to. The source of this information on a complex rule issued by the Department of Labor in the investment industry, a columnist for MarketWatch, I'm assuming. Actually, MarketWatch allows non-professionals to write for them. But this is not from their opinion journal. So I believe he is a writer for MarketWatch. There's nothing saying he's not. He was born about 2000. No, I'm sorry. He was born about 33 years ago, since that's his current age. He was gained his fame on the Jersey Shore. That's a show. He was in its debut in 2009, and he stayed on the show the entire time. Got to appear on Howard Stern, The Tonight Show with Conan O'Brien, Jay Leno, Sports Nation, Ellen DeGeneres, Conan, Chelsea Lately. He was a contestant on season 11 of Dancing with the Stars and eliminated on the fourth week, so he made it through three. He's been in commercials, and he's done comedy, and he did make a boatload of money, more than $5 million in 2010, working through endorsements with Devotion Vodka. Now, I haven't tried Devotion Vodka. See, you get something out of all of these things. In March 2011, he appeared on the Comedy Central roast of Donald Trump. And it goes on and on. What are you not hearing me say? Well, his personal life. He was born in Staten Island and grew up in New Jersey. He graduated from high school in 2000. He was an assistant manager of a fitness center in Staten Island. When that job, because the fitness center closed, he decided to make a boatload of money as an underwear model. This is who's letting you know from MarketWatch that the Department of Labor is just trying to help you, and what a good job they're doing. Which brings us to our first song. Whenever I look for wisdom, I turn to Alan Parsons, and it seemed appropriate when you're listening to an underwear model in a major investment publication explain the Department of Labor rule and the three ways it benefits you. You might not want to read that. You might need one more reason why you should listen. And therefore, let's play some Alan Parsons. Give me one good reason, Alan Parsons. Give me one good reason why I should listen to you. Okay, now, is my intent to target Mike Sorrentino, who I don't even know, and lambast him either personally or professionally for writing an article with which I disagree and for which he is clearly not qualified to write? No, I have nothing against Mike Sorrentino. He's been a very successful actor, model. He's made a boatload of money entertaining people. And sure, he, like anybody in the entertainment field, there are those who love Mike Sorrentino and don't like Mike Sorrentino. But my point is, when you read information, even in MarketWatch and other professional investment shows and media, you need to see who it is that's giving you the advice before you just run off and take it. So, hey, nothing against Mike Sorrentino. My beef is with the investment publications who allow people to write for them who have absolutely no idea what they're talking about. Oh boy, I don't know about you. You know what I need? I bet you do. Hi, this is Paul Puckett. As you may know, I love coffee. My friends would tell you I don't love coffee. It's an obsession, and not just any coffee. Espresso. If you're in the Bradenton area, one of the jewels of Bradenton is Old Main Street, and you'll find a coffee shop, B-Town Coffee, with a great alley and awnings and fans to keep you cool in the summer and in the shade, free Wi-Fi, and quite frankly, the best hot dog in town. Stop by. You'll enjoy B-Town Coffee. There's nothing like espresso, especially nothing like B-Town Espresso. It's a beautiful day. I think I'll take Harry down to B-Town Espresso with my laptop when I do a little work later this afternoon. Okay, so I took a little longer than I intended, but I want to really emphasize the point. You need to know not only whether the information you're reading is accurate, but what the source of it is. So I highly encourage you, because you may be very surprised, since I, you know, unloaded a little bit on MarketWatch, letting an underwear model write for them, not an underwear model that had actually serviced clients and worked in the industry, but an underwear model with absolutely no experience in the industry. I'll give you, for instance, an example of someone I hear regularly who's become very big. You will know who it is, Susie Orman. You'll know her name. Susie Orman was a former stockbroker. Okay, I don't agree with every single thing Susie Orman says, but I'll tell you one thing I can tell you. I've never heard her say anything that didn't make sense, even if I disagreed with it, because she'd been in the industry. Okay, this is not an endorsement of Susie Orman, except to say she is absolutely qualified to share her knowledge with you. I'll also say a semi-endorsement of Susie Orman. About 95% of what I hear her say, I totally agree. And I've been in the industry 27 years now, or whatever it is. Don't you love it when an investment advisor has difficulty doing math on his own show? Okay. So let's turn to the next type of article you might see, another topic I've talked about on the show, about managing money in retirement. And this article is from Morningstar.com, and it's actually a series of three articles. So let's read the titles. An aggressive retirement portfolio in three buckets, a moderate retirement portfolio in three buckets, a conservative retirement portfolio in three buckets. Now, the writer is Christine Benz, who's the lead writer and editor for Morningstar. And she's been writing for Morningstar for years. I don't have her bio in front of me, but I'm going to consider that relatively irrelevant for purposes of this article, because she's writing about one of the top professionals in the industry, financial planning guru. This is a quote. The central idea of the bucket strategy as envisioned by financial planning guru Harold Ivinsky, unquote. You may recall I suggested you all run out and get Hello Harold stories from Harold Ivinsky about his career in the industry with advice for people like you. I don't agree with 100% of what's in that book, but I probably agree with 99% of it. Harold Ivinsky is the father, in my opinion, of the fiduciary rule. Well, that may be going a little far. Fiduciary has been around for a long time, but he's been a big supporter of it. But he's the father of financial planning in many ways. He teaches at Texas Tech University when not managing money for his clients. His firm here in Florida is one of the most reputable firms I think there is on money management. So when Harold Ivinsky speaks, I suggest you listen. You can bet I do. Okay, now that does not mean that what I see here is I'm going to totally agree with. First of all, an aggressive retirement portfolio in three buckets, a moderate retirement portfolio in three buckets, a conservative retirement portfolio in three buckets presumes that your risk tolerance, how much risk you're willing to take, should drive what portfolio you go into. You can go back several shows and replay this if you like, but real quickly, be glad your doctor does not ask you your diet and exercise tolerance, because if he did, or she did, since almost all the doctors I've had in my life have been ladies, I was delivered in the world by a lady doctor. You don't want your doctor asking you what your tolerance is. Yes, what you're allergic to is important, but your tolerance, hey, bad news. If you need to lose weight, I guarantee you the doctor is going to be telling you you're going to have to increase your exercise and make dietary changes. If you're not willing to do that, well, he can make the recommendation all day long, or she can make the recommendation all day long. You're not going to do it. But my point is, they don't care what your diet and exercise tolerance is unless you're in a health situation or have allergies that prevent you from doing something. Well, here in the investment field, we drive things by what you tell us to do with your money, and it is your money. But my first little quibble here, even though this is coming from Morningstar.com, written by Christine Benz about one of the greatest men in the profession, Harold Ivinsky. Let's look at the bucket strategy for a moment. I think, generally speaking, it's up to us, and Mr. Ivinsky actually in some ways agrees with this. We need to educate you on what your risk tolerance should be, but if you don't buy into it, like Mr. Ivinsky, I agree with him. The problem with talking you into a risk tolerance that maybe not fit you, doesn't fit you, is when the market takes a big tumble and your real risk tolerance makes you call us up and say, sell, that's not a good thing. That's not a good thing. But I do believe we have a responsibility to at least tell you. And I happen to know that Mr. Vinsky's firm does that. So the conservative bucket, three-bucket strategy, is 12% cash, 48% fixed income, 40% primarily equities. There is, for some reason, an 8% bond position in the long-term portfolio. I don't know why. I don't consider bonds a long-term investment, particularly with interest rates where they are. Okay, the moderate investor lowers the cash from 12 to 10, fixed income from 48 to 40, and equity basically from 40 to 50. Well, what if you're aggressive? Then 8% cash instead of the 10 and 12, 32% fixed income instead of 40 and 48, and 60% long-term, generally speaking, equities. What's wrong with that, Paul? Well, there's nothing wrong with the bucket strategy. As a matter of fact, the bucket strategy is brilliant. The bucket strategy is brilliant. Here's what I think you need to think about. First of all, the cash positions of 8, 10, and 12, if you're retired, may or may not be enough depending on how much money you actually have. So if you're an investor below $500,000, you might want to have a little more in your emergency fund. Maybe 15%, 20%, regardless of how aggressive you are as an investor. The big problem I have with the bucket strategy is not the bucket strategy itself. I love the bucket strategy. Is the fixed income bucket. Okay? According to Morningstar, what Morningstar recommends, I don't believe, I don't know if this is Mr. Ivinsky's recommendation or Morningstar's recommendation. I suspect Morningstar's. Fidelity short-term bond, Harbor bond, Vanguard short-term inflation-protected securities, and Vanguard Wellesley income, which does have a slight equity exposure. Ladies and gentlemen, we are in a very low interest rate environment. So, A, what you put in a bond fund is not going to generate much in income. B, your only principal gain will come from falling interest rates. They're pretty low right now. Could they fall? Sure. Japan went negative. But how negative will they go? There's very little gain potential in bonds. What about losses? Okay, keep in mind, this is a three-bucket strategy for retirees. People not working, living off their portfolios, Social Security, pension if they're really lucky. Well, I got news for you. You start looking at the duration, meaning the average maturity of the bonds in a portfolio, or just the duration on a specific bond. What that duration number tells you is an approximate estimate of what percentage of the value you will lose if interest rates go up by 1%. All they got to do is go up 1%, and you'll lose that percentage. So, for instance, Vanguard Total Bond, last time I looked, had a duration of 7. One of the largest and most invested in bond funds in the market today and for a while. Wonder how many of the investors in that realize rates go up 1 point and they lose 7% of value. Oh, Paul, 7's not that much. I mean, you know, I still get the 2.5% yield. Well, that's for 1% increase. Unless the fund manager changes the duration in an index fund, that's not likely to happen. Let's say interest rates go up over a period of 1 year or even 2 or 3 years. It's 7% every time it happens. So a 3% increase would be a 21% loss. Do I have your attention yet? So for the fixed income bucket, the only difference between what I and other professionals of like mind recommend for our clients is, hey, equities go up, they go down. Okay, we all recognize there is a risk in the equity, which is a fancy word for stocks. Actually, I like the word equity better because equity means ownership, like the equity in your home, what you own, not what the bank owns, what you own. Assuming that you have a mortgage. If you don't have a mortgage, the bank doesn't own anything. We know stocks are volatile. It amuses me every time somebody reports volatility is coming. Well, volatility is always there in the stock market. It's the way it works. Over the long term, different thing. You eliminate a lot of the impact of volatility. I find it ironic that I said impact as I hit the mic stand. You eliminate the impact of volatility over time. If you don't care about what happens over a 1 day, 1 week, 1 month, or 1 year time period, volatility is irrelevant. You're looking long term. And quite frankly, everything in bucket three, that's the growth bucket or equity bucket or stock bucket, should be long term, meaning at least 10 years. I prefer 15 or more. Okay, so what am I saying? In the first, I'm saying don't listen to underwear models when they give you information about anything except perhaps underwear or how to get in the modeling industry or a good agent to help you in the modeling industry. To the relief of everybody who has seen me, no, I am not planning on becoming an underwear model as a result of seeing how well Mr. Sorrentino has done in his building of his own net worth. He's done very well. The other thing is, even when the writer or what a writer is covering is accurate, don't take everything 100%. Check things out a little bit. You know, it is not safe today to invest in bonds. It really isn't. I think I need another sip of espresso. Let's go to another commercial break, and we'll be back in just a second.
When you want the best in business coaching, life coaching, or perhaps your organization, business, or company is in need of a dynamic speaker for an upcoming workshop or seminar, contact Louise Hicks for L. Hicks Consulting Services at 1-562-310-1495. From anywhere around the world, that's 1-562-310-1495. For more information about Louise Hicks and her consulting services, visit her website at www.louisehicks.biz. Again, that's www.louisehicks.biz. Or call 1-562-310-1495. L. Hicks Consulting Services, where professionalism is top priority.
You know, the problem with being spontaneous and looking and listening for the topics that might be important to cover on a given show is that sometimes you can get passionate about those and discover that there's only 10 minutes left in the show where you had three more songs totaling 12 minutes to illustrate points on three other topics that you just aren't going to have time to cover today. Well, that's all right. That's all right. That's life. That's the way things work. So instead, we're going to close out with a little more on decluttering and things that you can do in retirement once you've gotten decluttered. You might spend your first year in retirement decluttering from all the stuff you decide, no, I really don't need that. But once you've decluttered, you're going to need something to do. So getting back to my email box and my attempts to declutter it, which are mostly successful, I have two laptops that I use. I'm recording the show or broadcasting the show. Today I am recording it, but on a MacBook Pro. I'm using GarageBand. And then I have, for most of what I do work-wise, an Asus Flipbook PC. Well, for the past couple of days, I've been primarily working, which means I've been using my PC. So I didn't bother to even turn on the MacBook for one full day. This morning, I turned on my MacBook. Now, my MacBook downloads, obviously, through Mac Mail, the email that I receive. So although I have gotten rid of, so far, over 300 subscriptions to publications and advertisements that those publications sent to me because I authorized it, and I've now turned those off, even after getting rid of that many, in a 36-hour period, evidently, I received 410 email. This is not bragging. If you received less than that, pat yourself on the back. It's evidence that the decluttering process of my email shall continue until it gets down to just what I want. Emails from clients, emails from friends, and emails from the few publications I plan to remain subscribed to. Throw in the bank and updates from Mint.com, which is a free package on the internet I recommend if you don't currently track your finances using Quicken or another money management program that lets you know how much you have and sends you alerts if your bank account gets low or if you put in a big deposit. 410 email. Clearly, I still have work to do. Okay, once I get that work done, like many of you who will retire, I'll be looking for something to do. When you're retired, it's pretty much up to you. Hobbies can be great things. Now, the more hobbies you have before you retire, the easier it is to make that transition. So a few of the projects I'm working on that have nothing to do with anything except they make me feel good, I enjoy them, and they actually help me from the standpoint of they're all de-stressors. About 10 years ago, I came to the conclusion that stress, like fear, is an option. Why have it if you don't need it and it doesn't help you? Now, sometimes it can be helpful. Stress can be a good motivator when the doctor says, you need to drop 10 pounds. But other than that, you want to contain stress as much as you can. So what I find very relaxing, my dad carried, he passed away last year at 92, and he carried for 50 years a leather briefcase made in Panama. It's made out of rawhide, and it's you can tell immediately it's South American. Very, very well made, but over, of course, the 50 years that he carried it, and 20 years he didn't, it's a 70-year-old briefcase, I found out. Needless to say, it got worn. So, although I haven't worked with leather since, 1970, I thought it might be fun to redo that briefcase. It's amazing how much you remember, and it's amazing how fun it can be to dive in and do that. Now, just for fun, we're also updating some furniture that I inherited so that we like the way it looks for our taste in decor. And I have already done one dresser which actually has become a bar, at least for now, in a distressed style, which is challenging. And I'm about to do my parents' dresser and nightstands for our master bedroom. And getting the finish off that has been a little bit challenging. It doesn't matter, though. I don't have a deadline. Well, she's not listening. Technically, I have a deadline. But for the hobbies you have, you don't necessarily have a deadline. They're just relaxing things that you pick up and do when you feel like it and put away when you don't. Don't leave them in the middle of the floor. That would be cluttering. So my suggestion for those of you who are still working, go ahead. Take a break occasionally. Find a hobby you can continue so that your transition to retirement will be easier. Now, of course, I say that. If finishing furniture, refinishing furniture, building furniture, working with leather, I also do some whittling. That's definitely more for me. I'm not a wood carver by trade or by talent. You know, those things can also create clutter because I may end up needing a warehouse to hold the furniture I'm refinishing, the wood that I'm carving, and perhaps the leather that I'm planning on making into something. But, you know, you can keep these things in control. Everything in moderation. Maintain a balance. Why not? Well, as I said, today we ended up focusing a bit, and I'd like to go back briefly and make sure we really cover those things. Let's go back to what we just talked about a moment ago. The three-bucket strategy. What I didn't say, and this is why I like the three-bucket strategy. If your first bucket is basically cash, meaning your emergency fund, your checking account, your savings account, your, well, CDs if they're 1 year or less. If that's where you're putting your safe money and you know you have enough in there, then your second bucket, which produces income, ideally from something better than bonds, I do not recommend bonds at all these days. In my book, Retirement Income Lock, we talk about alternatives, including fixed annuities, immediate annuities, certificates of deposit if you can find something with a decent rate. But even if it doesn't have a decent rate, the principal's guaranteed. And then your third bucket has the risky assets in there. Well, in my first book, Investophobia, I talk about the fears people have about their money. And one of those fears that a lot of people share is the fear of loss, of making a mistake in their investment portfolio, of seeing their value fall. Well, if your first two buckets are safe, it's possible for just about anybody to be much less concerned when the market does what it naturally does, fall. It also naturally rises, and over time, it rises more than it falls, and that will continue as long as we live in a capitalist system or semi-capitalist system where when you create something, you're compensated for it. So unless you believe that everyone is going to lose their jobs and every U.S. company is going to go under, or every company, because you can invest internationally too, then you should have confidence that over time the stock market will continue growing. So the three-bucket strategy, brilliant. Focus on making sure you have the right amount in each bucket and make sure that when you think something is safe, i.e. bond funds, that it actually is safe. It actually is safe. We'll probably cover that in a less headache-inducing way on a show soon. Again, make sure, I mean, you're listening to me. You can look up my bio at www.ppuckett.com, P-P-U-C-K-E-T-T.com. You can go to Q1 Advisors. You can pull me up on the SEC website. It'll redirect you to the state of Virginia, the Commonwealth of Virginia, I should say, so that you can find out anything you need to know about me. And one of the beautiful things about both FINRA and the SEC is they make it possible for you to check out the regulatory history of the person you're working with. Insurance agents, also at the state level, you can find at your Department of Insurance's website. Okay, more music next week and back to life. Maybe we'll declutter a little bit. Until then, have a great day.